Sport Podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
A very warm welcome to this week's Punt podcast. The Guardian's Dominic Fifield is our guest on the pod this week. He's a big Palace fan, so we'll ask him who's culpable at Crystal Palace this season. Was the ill-fated Frank de Boer the problem, or does the issue run deeper? We'll also discuss the state of the Champions League after the first set of fixtures. Should it be a knockout, and is there too much cannon fodder in the competition? There's also bets to come in the Football League and in Europe, but let's start with the Premier League. My name is Dave Kellner, and I'm joined on the line by Derek McGovern and in the studio by William Hill's head of in-play trading, Andy Excel. First of all, a good morning to you, Derek McGovern.
Good morning, chaps. I noticed that you were still cock-a-hoop in the studio about your Watford trip last week, Dave. Very good. Well done, that one.
Thank you, Derek. Through gritted teeth, you say that, I'm sure.
Yes, indeed.
Because
gritted you, everything.
You were so close to tipping them as well last week, Derek. So a nod to you on that on that as well. Andy Excel, how are you, sir?
Good, thanks.
Bournemouth versus Brighton is the first live televised game in the Premier League this weekend. It starts actually Friday night at 8 p.m. Bournemouth 6-5 to win the game. The draw 23-10 with Brighton 23-10. Enhanced odds: Jermaine Defoe to score and Bournemouth to win was 23-10. That's been enhanced to 5-2. And Pascal Gross to score and Brighton to win was 13-2. That's been enhanced to 15-2. Are the two teams from down south kicking off the weekend. Bournemouth have only won 5 league games this calendar year, which is the lowest total of any team that's been involved in the Premier League this season and the Premier League last season. I like Eddie Howe, Derek, but is there cause for concern at Bournemouth now?
Sure, right, there. Eddie Howe seems to be known as Eddie Who, because things are not going well for them. You meant that stat I didn't realise. I mean, they would be relegated, wouldn't they, had they not started the first half of last season okay?
Yeah.
And they don't seem to have a pattern. They don't seem to have a plan. It's sort of send 11 out there and hope for the best, it seems, right now. This is a man who's talked about as potential England boss. He's doing so badly right now, he might well be. I mean, looking at the play in Brighton, I'm not saying Brighton have low expectations, but their number one aim this season is to knock Bournemouth off their perch. But, you know, Brighton will come into this match with confidence. You can't say that about Bournemouth. Great result for them. They haven't started the season that badly. They've been talked about as a team with no strikers, but they've made a few signings that players under the radar, that seems to be paying off. And I've looked at the odds for this one. Every so often you come across a bet that you can't possibly see losing. Every now and again it wins, by the way. And I can't possibly see Brighton losing to Bournemouth here. The natives are getting restless at Bournemouth. They're all even throwing a hot water bottles on the pitch. That's how bad it is. I think Brighton are overpriced here, and I think they'll beat Bournemouth. I think any team can beat Bournemouth right now. The manager the players are lacking in confidence, and a manager, it seems to me, just doesn't know which way to turn.
If you're a bit more intrepid than Derek and you think, or a bit less intrepid than Derek and you think Brighton plus one could be the play, 8-13 odds on if you're getting two results running for you there. But Brighton to win in 90 minutes is currently available at 23-10. Derek talked about a few players that have been signed that have gone under the radar. Pascal Gross is one of those players. He made the most assists in the Bundesliga last season despite playing for Ingolstadt, who got relegated, Andy.
Well, that sort of underlines a theme for me. The big clubs don't sign the right players and the little clubs do sign the right players. I mean, who'd heard of Toby Alderweireld before he went to Southampton? And now everybody wants him. Virgil van Dijk, the same thing. It's the big clubs don't do their transfer business very well and the little clubs do dig them out. Mm. So I'm with Derek here. He's kind of nicked my line. I was going to go with sacrificial burning of tartan blankets at Bournemouth. But I think Brighton are a good price here as well. Bournemouth are just... they've lost their way, and dare I say, it's since they lost an Arsenal player, Jack Wilshere. They were all right up until he went last year, and then they've lost all their forward play. They've got weaker at the back. They've conceded in the first half in four or five games this season. That's not a good sign if you're conceding early. And I think Brighton are a decent price here.
On to Crystal Palace versus Southampton, 12:30 on Saturday. Palace are 2-1. The draw 9-4. Southampton 11-8. Enhanced odds: Christian Benteke to score and Crystal Palace to win was 3-1. Enhanced to 7-2. Manolo Gabbiadini to score and Southampton to win was 13-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1. This is hashtag your odds, so do get your bets into at William Hill, and the traders will attempt to price it up for you. And Palace Southampton is interesting, and we'll talk more about the sacking of Frank de Boer with the FWA guest Dominic Fifield later on the podcast. I'm interested, Andy, how that sacking has affected the betting for this match. You hear punters talking about new manager syndrome. There's been articles written about this as well. There's an upturn in form when a new manager comes in. Is it a source for discussion in the trading room?
Not really, apart from the fact that that's what people are going to think. Statistics sort of back it up, but not conclusively. When a team gets a new manager, it goes one way or the other very quickly. That's what it tells you. Now, they've got Steady the Ship Roy in, who's probably had more positions than the Kama Sutra. But, but yeah, he's, you know, he's going to try and not concede. They've been conceded too many. That's his first order of play. The thing about this fixture is both teams have been missing their best player. Wilfried Zaha for Palace and Van Dijk for Southampton. Now, will either of them be back this week? I doubt it. Van Dijk might feature. But I just think it's going to be a safe game from both teams. Southampton will be happy with a draw. Palace just want to get something. So I'm thinking a draw here.
9-4 for the draw. If De Boer was still in charge, not Hodgson, would Palace still be 2-1 in your opinion?
Probably a fraction bigger.
Derek, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I'm a bit with Andy. I hate backing the draw normally because it's an admission that I haven't got a clue, and most of you already knew that anyway. It's just that I can't have Roy Hodgson with anybody's money. His first task is to win the dressing room because it seems to be lost under De Boer. But he's asked if a draw would be good enough. I mean, the man is just, he takes caution to a ridiculous degree, and his choice of players. You know, when he was at Blackburn, he paid $7.5 million for Kevin Davis. That was at a time when $7.5 million was worth something, unlike Davis. At Liverpool, he left Daniel Agger on the bench. Even worse, he left Paul Konchesky on the pitch. I mean, the man is a clown. We saw what he did with England. He lives by the motto, if you score none, we will too. This has got nil-nil written all over it. And both sides, both managers will be cock-a-hoop if that happens. I've never seen a match more likely to finish in a draw.
15-2 for the nil-nil draw in the game. Tottenham versus Swansea is next. This is 5:30 on Saturday at Wembley. And Spurs are 1-4. The draw 5-1. Swansea 10-1. Enhanced odds, Harry Kane to score. And Tottenham to win 2-0. 2-1 or 3-1 was 7-2. That's been boosted to 4-1. And Tammy Abraham to score and Swansea to win in the game was 18-1. That's been enhanced to 20-1. Spurs come into this on the back of their best performance since making Wembley their new home. They played with real quality on Wednesday night and dispatched Borussia Dortmund by 3-1. That came on the back of a 3-0 win at Goodison. And if Spurs had ever gone away, Derek, do those two results mean that they're now back?
They were two fantastic results. Two really great performances. I question whether the first one, the Everton one, might be a bit overrated because Everton were abysmal. But you can't knock what they did against Dortmund in midweek. It was sensational. And until that night, I'd have said Tottenham were about as comfortable at Wembley as England are. But that's nailed the hoodoo, hasn't it? But the 1-4, and you know, let's not forget, this is still, they're at Wembley. It's still pretty much neutral ground. And backing 1-4 pokes on neutral territory is the quickest way to the poorhouse. And, you know, I've lived there for some years, well, rented there. I just can't back them at those kind of odds, especially that there's also the danger that you might think it's a bit of after the Lord Mayor's show. You know, Dortmund in the Champions League at Wembley on a Wednesday night. Oh, that's Swansea, geez. I don't know. I still can't trust Spurs enough, rather, to back them at 1-4. At White Hart, if they were at White Hart Lane, I can't imagine they'd be shorter than 1-4. Can't possibly be shorter than that. So why are we backing them at neutral territory at the same prices? It's a bad bet. It's about I can't trust Swansea enough to back them either, by the way. But the Harry Kane business, I've watched him recently. Everybody's watched him recently. And he just oozes goals, doesn't he? I mean, he doesn't...
I thought you were going to say, I can't see it, Derek, then. I thought you were going to stick the knife into Harry Kane.
When he first came onto the scene and he was scoring all these goals, I thought, it's another Clive Allen, this. It's, you know, he's going to go backwards. But he's getting better and better. And his every touch is menacing to the opposition. He's a million times better than I thought he was. So I'm going to go for that enhanced odds, the Spurs to win 2-0, 2-1 or 3-1, I think it was, with Kane to score. Because Kane will score. I mean, he will. And they look right reasonable scorelines to me to bet them.
He's got 23 goals in 21 league appearances this calendar year so far, Harry Kane. So he is on fire at the moment. And Spurs have got a cracking record against Swansea as well. They've never been beaten by the Swans in the Premier League, winning 10 of their 12 meetings. Do you think, Andy, this will be as one-sided as the betting suggests?
Yes, in short. I mean, I'm changing... To come back to Harry Kane briefly, I'm changing my view on him the same as Derek. I thought he was a proficient, a high-quality Premier League striker. But I said the other week that England only had one world-class player and he was on the bench, Butland. Well, I think Kane's moving in that direction. I'm not quite ready to put him there yet, but he's moving in that direction. As you said, Spurs are great against Swansea, 8-1 on aggregate last season, and I think this is going to be a massacre.
What are we looking at then, handicaps?
I've got Spurs -2 is where I'm at. I think they're going to win by more than 2.
8-5.
Harry Kane's handicap is his interviewing technique. It's awful, isn't it?
8-5, Spurs -2 in the match.
Alex Dunn here, looking ahead to the best of the European football, or to be more precise, the best bet in European football this weekend. And my eyes have been drawn to Serie A on Sunday afternoon. AC Milan play host to Udinese, and I do not want to be with the home side. Not at that price, anyway. They're too short as far as I'm concerned. They were tipped by many to make giant strides in Serie A this season and perhaps go and challenge the likes of Juventus and Napoli at the top of the table. That could still happen, but I'm less than convinced, and they were less than convincing, when getting tonked by Lazio last week. That was 4-1. Udinese, granted, away from home aren't superb, but head-to-head wise they've actually got a decent record against AC Milan. I'm going to play it slightly tentatively, but Udinese +2 goals in this, which allows you obviously the Udinese win, the draw, or even Udinese to lose by a goal, is available at 4-6. That is a knockout price and the best bet for me in Europe this weekend.
Now, let's move on to Sunday's games. A couple of crackers on Sunday. Chelsea versus Arsenal first up at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea 3-4 to win the match. The draw 11-4 with Arsenal 7-2. Enhanced odds, Alvaro Morata to score and Chelsea to win. Was 6-4, now 7-4. Alexandre Lacazette to score and Arsenal to win was 5-1. That's been enhanced to 6-1. And we are recording this prior to Arsenal's home game against FC Köln in the Europa League. Hopefully, they will have saved something for this one, though, because Stamford Bridge hasn't been a happy hunting ground for the Gunners in recent times. They've lost the last 5 Premier League games at Stamford Bridge and have conceded at least 2 in their last 8 games away at Chelsea as well. Andy, Arsenal fan, not looking forward to this one.
Ever hopeful.
Glass half full.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at the record at Chelsea and it isn't great, but overall against them in other games, it's not too bad. It's actually against the top teams, it's one of the better records Arsenal got, which isn't saying much. But I actually am not convinced by Chelsea this season either.
Wow.
So I guess I'm trying to find a way, I think, but I'm not far off being as unconvinced by Chelsea as I am by Arsenal. I think not having Hazard is a huge thing for him now. He's on his way back, and who knows what part he's going to play this weekend. But they basically robbed Spurs. They edged past Leicester, lost at home to Burnley. They haven't convinced me either. So I think if there is any value, it's in Arsenal.
7-2 Arsenal to win the game. If you're looking at Arsenal on the handicap, which many people will if they fancy the away side in this one, Arsenal +1 is 19-20 in the market. Draw no bet as well. Arsenal 2-1 could be of interest if you've got a similar mindset to Andy here in the studio, who is an Arsenal fan. Chelsea Derek, not convincing Andy. They did win 6-0 against Karabag. That's a big point on Eden Hazard as well. He got half an hour in that match. You could see him feature in the starting 11 on Sunday.
Yeah, I think he will, actually. And they need him as well. You're right. Without Hazard, they're not the same team, Chelsea. And you could say that about anybody with a player as gifted as him. He's just a sensational player. And once he does get back, watch Chelsea go. Yeah, and in previous seasons, I'd look at Arsenal at 7-2 here and think, you can't let a team like Arsenal go unbacked. You can now. I mean, they're a joke right now, Arsenal. Last season, they lost at City. They lost at Chelsea. They drew at Man U. Well, everybody did. They lost at Liverpool. They lost at Tottenham. Notice the trend here. I can't see why they're going to end that trend at Chelsea this weekend. Whenever they go away to a decent side, they lose. Last season as well, by the way, they got mullered 5-1 at Bayern Munich. This is a side in disarray, a manager in disarray. And this is the first time, by the way. We'll see how they cope with playing on a Thursday and a Sunday. Mm-hmm. All the teams that moan about that. Arsenal haven't had to do that in a month of Sundays. But they do this time around. I've got to go for Chelsea. I sided with them against Tottenham, remember, a few weeks ago when they were overpriced. The champions were overpriced on what was neutral territory. I'm not saying they're overpriced here, but I can't see anything other than a Chelsea win.
3-4, Chelsea to win the game. Manchester United versus Everton finishes the weekend. 4 p.m. kickoff on Sunday. Manchester United are 1-3 to win this one. The draw 19-5, Everton 9-1. Enhanced odds, Romelu Lukaku to score and Manchester United to win 1-0, 2-0 or 2-1. Was 19-5, that's been pushed out to 9-2. And Wayne Rooney to score and Everton to win was 12-1. That's been enhanced to 14-1. And this will be a pretty quick turnaround for Everton, who are on the road in the Europa League. They travel to Italy to take on Atalanta on Thursday night. I'm sure there'll be a little bit of interest in Wayne Rooney to score any time on his return to Old Trafford. And 17-5 to score in the match, which might be a little on the big side. You went with Everton. That's a fair point. You went with Everton last week, Andy. Obviously, they were dismantled in the end by Spurs. They're a huge price on the road this weekend.
Yeah, and I've got to change my view, haven't I, quickly here. They're going in the wrong direction all of a sudden, Everton. They started the season, everybody looked full of hope, and things seem to be going off the rails quite quickly there. And like you say, coming back from Italy on a Thursday, I just can't see anything but United, but in their usual ruthless, efficient manner. Nothing spectacular. But yeah, they'll grind them down.
You think United to win 2-0, perhaps?
Well, one thing I have noticed is United, and it's pretty much the same the other night, they don't score in the first 40 minutes. They take a while to get people down. So I'm willing to take a chance on Everton holding on till half time and then United winning from there. So draw United is what I'm thinking as a double result.
Yeah, that's 16-5 in the market. Mourinho's had his struggles against Ronald Koeman in the Premier League. He's actually faced Koeman more times without winning than any other manager in the Premier League, 5 times in total. So he'll have a plan, Ronald Koeman. It's whether or not the players can put that plan into fruition out on the pitch on Sunday afternoon, Derek.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do remember, maybe Everton are having troubles at Goodison. I remember one of their recent away games at City, they looked really tidy. I know that City went down to 10 men early on and had a lot of the ball in the second half, but it was still a tidy performance from Everton that night. And when I look at 9-1 here to be the United side that were in action in midweek, same as Everton are going to be, they've lost Paul Pogba, their best player. I think it's a bit overpriced. I wouldn't be touching Rooney. I mean, he looks so slow, he'd struggle to beat one of his racehorses right now. But there's still plenty of other players in that Everton team that are capable. The better Everton than what they showed against Tottenham. The reason that 9-1 probably is because they're in action on Thursday and then going to United right after that. It's not an easy task. But without Pogba are like Chelsea without Hazard to me. You know, probably 80%, an 80% full-strength side without him. And 1-3, I couldn't back them against it. And Everton side, like, people were tipping them for the top 6 place. I think the bookies have overreacted to what happened against Tottenham last week for Everton. I think 9-1 is big, and I'm going to give them a go. I think I can't get where United only finished a place above Everton last season, didn't he? And the signings haven't, to me, don't set the pulse racing. I can't have this. I can't have United that short. Everton 9-1 is too big.
Does sound like you're trying to talk yourself into it there a little bit, Derek.
And you know, when I look at this fixture, I raise eyebrows at Everton's price here. I just wait. Had this been a week ago, it would be one of those get your mortgage on. I'm not saying they're going to win, but it's one of their massively overpriced. The Tottenham performance worries me. I mean, it was something that could be the start of something seriously wrong. But if you treat it as a blip, and why not? It's just one match. 9-1. There isn't a punter in the world that can argue that that's not a value bet.
This week's Naps coming next.
Gav P turned the key a few times on his League One Naps machine, and the engine finally spluttered into action last weekend with Charlton at 11-10 to lift him off the bottom of the table. Al Ross bagged his fourth winner from 6 weeks with Crewe at 11-10 and sits proudly at the top. And just to prove the saying, if you throw enough at the wall, some will stick, DK nailed a whomper 9-2 Watford to beat Saints to go out of the red and into the black.
It's rich coming from Lee Phelps, isn't it, that, to be honest?
Rich and Lee Phelps are words that associate.
That's a fair point. Derek, we'll start with you. Have you had a look at the 3 p.m. games on Saturday? Do any catch your eye? What's the best bet this weekend?
Difficult set of fixtures, it has to be said. You know, I watched that Huddersfield-West Ham game on Monday night, and West Ham won it in the end. Looked tidy, I suppose, when you look at the scoreline. But I was really impressed by Huddersfield. I thought they looked a very, very tidy side indeed. They're at home to Leicester on Saturday, and they're 2-1. Leicester are the favourites. I don't see that. I'm going to give Huddersfield a go here. I was amazed by what I saw from them, and I think they'll beat Leicester.
I think you were watching a different game, Derek. I thought they were absolutely appalling, Huddersfield.
Did you really?
Yeah. I did. Yeah. I thought they were terrible. I was contemplating backing them to be relegated on the back of that performance. I fancy Leicester strongly this weekend, so we couldn't disagree more on that match. Huddersfield 2-1. I won't nap them, though, Derek, but I'll let you have Huddersfield at 2-1. I'm taking you on there, though.
All right, you're welcome.
Andy, your bet?
Sorry, I'm just getting on the phone to get on 4 and 5-0.
Cheeky devil.
Through gritted teeth, it's Spurs -2.
8-5 it was for Spurs -2. I'm going with Palace. I think they're a stonking bet to beat Southampton. Took Southampton on last week at 9-2. I think Palace at 2-1. Didn't play badly against Burnley. Should have won that game. They'll have a little bit of a bounce, I think, with Hodgson coming in, even though I don't think he's the long-term fix for Crystal Palace. But I think they'll win this weekend. So Palace 2-1 is my selection. So Huddersfield 2-1 to beat Leicester. Palace 2-1 to beat Southampton. Tottenham -2 at 8-5. That treble 22.4-1 on this week's Premier League.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, joining myself and Derek on the line, delighted to welcome Dominic Fifield, the London football correspondent for The Guardian and The Observer, and a big Palace fan as well, so perfectly positioned to talk about Frank de Boer. First of all, a warm welcome. A good afternoon to you, Dominic.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm coping with Roy.
It's been a tumultuous time as far as Crystal Palace Football Club are concerned, Dominic. Who's culpable, first of all? Frank de Boer, given the job, Steve Parish said, you've got money to invest, we're going forward with you, and that lasted 4 games in the end.
I think there's culpability on both parts, on Frank de Boer's side and certainly on the hierarchy side for the appointment in the first place. To start with Steve Parish and the American major shareholders, clearly the due diligence wasn't good enough in the summer. I think the whole schism that developed so quickly between board and manager is indicative of that, and shows that there was a personality clash. There were issues there, and I don't think that relationship, once it had fractured, was ever going to be repaired. Similarly, you could argue that, you know, were there funds there? They kind of spent £8 million on one player prior to the final day of the transfer window, which is not enough money to conduct a revolution in a club's playing style. It's simply not, certainly in the brutal world of the Premier League. But likewise, I think there was naivety shown in Frank de Boer's tactics. I think that the hierarchy would argue that they were told it was going to be evolution, not revolution, and yet everything that Frank de Boer did suggested change would have to be immediate and quick, and Palace's players as a squad weren't ready for that. I think he made the same mistakes over and over again in the first three matches in charge. The formation, the style, it just wasn't a comfortable fit. And sometimes you just have to cut your losses and accept that you've made a mistake and move on. And I think actually in the end of it, the board's decision to get rid of him after only four matches in the Premier League was brave, but probably correct.
That's something that you said last week on the podcast, Eric, when we spoke about Frank de Boer and we were talking about that might have been his last game last weekend against Burnley. It looked like that was in the pipeline before then. And you thought that it maybe be the right time to get rid early.
Yeah. Years ago, I used to be in a camp that said you've got to give managers time. You can't afford time in the Premier League now. You give them a couple more matches, they might have been 60 feet and relegation. Pretty much a certainty then. They can't afford to make those mistakes. It reminded me a bit of Graeme Souness when he took over at Liverpool, wanting to come in and do things his way. A massive revolution, basically, at Liverpool, getting rid of the players that had been there. And it didn't work. The players didn't buy into it. And now they're the Palace players bought into De Boer. But whether it's an upgrade going from Frank De Boer to Roy Hodgson is another matter. They've gone from Frank De Boer to Roy De Boer. I can't believe that a Premier League team could countenance employing that clown.
Dominic, as a fan of Crystal Palace, are you happy with the appointment or not?
I'm comfortable with it, yeah. I know Liverpool supporters and will balk at that. They don't understand that. But Liverpool was too big for Roy Hodgson. England, arguably, was too big for Roy Hodgson. Look at what he did at Fulham, what he did at West Bromwich Albion. Look at the success he has enjoyed through a 40-year career. He has won titles, albeit in Scandinavia, etc. He is the right fit for a club of Palace's size. And to be honest, what Palace need more than anything at the moment is somebody who can just organise them. And that's what Sam Allardyce did. That's what Tony Pulis did. They've actually got probably the best first team on paper they've ever had. They're all fit and available, and he just needed somebody to play them in the best formation with a style of play that suits them, and they will be fine. Certainly in terms of relegation, they will be fine. And I do actually think as long as Roy Hodgson has recovered from what happened with England, and all the early indications are that he's more enthusiastic than ever and excited about going back home, if you like. Mm. Then I think that he will do that job for Crystal Palace. We're not talking long term, but then who does talk long term? And Crystal Palace haven't talked long term for ages. They're forever appointing managers that last 9 months, 15 months, etc., etc. So, I mean, if Roy Hodgson sees that as 2-year contract, then that's not actually too bad in terms of Palace's recent managerial history. And I do think, actually, it will work, and we shouldn't be judging him on the mistakes that were made at Liverpool, admittedly at a very difficult time for Liverpool Football Club as well in terms of the ownership and everything surrounding it off the field.
One thing I would say about Hodgson is that he seems incapable. I mean, the best managers see what's going wrong on a pitch and change things. He seems incapable of doing that. I remember when he was, when England were having that nightmare against Iceland, and he's sitting while things are going pear-shaped on the pitch, he's sitting on the sidelines rubbing his chins. He did exactly the same at Liverpool. I remember one grim night when Liverpool were losing to Wolves at Anfield and they were being pummeled, and he just sat there and the camera was on. He looked a rabbit caught in the headlights, incapable of changing things. I've noted prices of 11 to 5 for Hodgson not to last the season at Palace, and that's a fantastic bet because they'd have to have a shocker of a season for that to happen, of course, but the appointment of him guarantees that. So that's it. There's a little tip for you.
Let's switch tack slightly and talk about the Champions League. We saw the first set of fixtures on Tuesday and Wednesday night. In your opinion, Dominic, is this competition still working in the early stages? The gulf between the best teams and the others is seemingly widening now. And Celtic were beaten 5-0 at home by PSG. I don't want to lump Celtic in with the minions, but they were dismantled on Tuesday night. And Chelsea hammered Carabag at Stamford Bridge. I know European football is becoming ever more commercialised now, and there's the need for more games, more TV revenue. But is that diluting the quality of the matches?
Well, some of them, yeah. Clearly, there are mismatches in the Champions League group stage. There have been over recent years as well. But then I'd counter that by saying that was Chelsea's one mismatch in this group. That they've got Roma and Atletico Madrid as the other two teams, and neither of those six ties is going to be, you know, easy. You know, Paris Saint-Germain have got, is it Bayern Munich in their group? Bayern Munich didn't, they won 3-0 against Anderlecht in the week. They apparently weren't that impressive. So I think there will be excellent ties. I mean, we saw the Liverpool game last night against Seville, and there will be matches in the group stage that do get the juices flowing, that are tight, that are hard fought. And it won't always work that the English teams will progress. I mean, look at Spurs' group. I mean, that's Real Madrid and Borussia Dortmund. Manchester City have still got to play Napoli and Shakhtar Donetsk, who have beaten Napoli. They're not going to be walkovers every week. So, to be honest, I think the alternative, which is going down the whole route of European Super Leagues and just the cream of the cream playing against each other, I think that's too dangerous. That doesn't allow, you know, aspirational clubs any opportunity at all of getting back into this stage. I sat next to the interpreter from Azerbaijan at Stamford Bridge on Tuesday night, and he fully expected Carabao to get thrashed out of sight, but nobody associated with Carabao was thinking along those lines. They were thinking Azerbaijani football here is being broadcast to the world. This is us given a profile, and that's how they looked at it. You know, maybe they will benefit from the revenue and that profile, the raised profile that tie and this group will afford them, and maybe they'll improve in time.
Derek, your thoughts?
Well, there will be better ties ahead, obviously, because we've seen, you know, some of the groups have three heavyweights, but it goes on too long, and by the time these heavyweights meet, you know, generally the group's already decided. You look at last season, I think of the 16 qualifiers for the knockout stage, 15 were absolutely nailed on right before the tournament began. I think there was one surprise in the whole lot. It's a crashing board, the group stages, doesn't matter who's in it. It's like a storyline in a porn film. You've got no interest in it, you just want to get to the good bits. And look at Liverpool's group. Liverpool, Spartak, Moscow, Sevilla and Maribor. I mean, that's so weak, I'm surprised they haven't appointed Louis Walsh to mentor it. It goes on long. You remember Tomorrow's World when you were waiting for Top of the Pops to come on and Tomorrow's World went on forever? Well, that's the group stages of the Champions League now. It'll never, ever go back to what it used to be when Liverpool kept winning it. Just the league winners playing, you know. I preferred it that way. It will never go. It'll never go back to that. But I would love it too. I would absolutely love it.
So it's time for the Naps from the Football League. I'm Pete Farries. I'll go first with the Championship this week, and I'm going to take Ipswich at 21-20 to beat Bolton Wanderers. Yes, Ipswich let me down massively against Fulham, and I won't lie to you, I backed them against QPR where they lost 2-1 as well the other day. But ultimately, I'm sticking with them here. They're playing Bolton Wanderers, a side who are yet to win this season, who've scored just 4 goals and conceded 14, a side who lost midweek to Sheffield United 1-0 when it could have been worse, a side battered by Middlesbrough, battered by Hull, and even though they're narrowly beaten by Derby County, it could have been a great deal worse. Ipswich Town, for me, one of the best bets of the Championship, the best bet of the Championship this weekend. They are yet to draw. It's been all or nothing so far for Mick McCarthy's men, but this weekend I'm going to go for it being all. Ipswich Town at 21-20 for me, but let's find out what Gav Puszczalowski thinks about League One.
Well, there's a change in form. The Knap of Charlton last weekend landed in League One, so let's make it 2 out of 2 this weekend. My Knap involves Blackburn Rovers at home to Wimbledon. Blackburn looked really solid at 4-6 to beat Wimbledon, but my challenge is to come up with something odds against every weekend, and that's what I'm going to try to do. So Blackburn solid at 4-6, but we can do better. They're taking on Wimbledon. Wimbledon last season struggled on the road, hardly any goals, and this season started exactly the same. The last 7 games away from home for Wimbledon, they've scored 1 goal in 7 games. Blackburn won the last four games straight, 12 points out of 12, starting to climb towards the top, and I think they'll win this one fairly handsomely. Last time at home for Blackburn Rovers, they put four past MK Dons. They followed that up with a 3-0 victory at Rochdale, and last time out went and won at a tough place, Scunthorpe, by goal to nil. So I fancy Blackburn in this one. 4-6 is great, but I'm all over Blackburn minus one at 9-5, and that is my NAP selection. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
Some crazy looking results in midweek would sometimes make this weekend's fixtures tricky to call on the face of it, but I suppose if you were a good footballing team playing in the southwest on a hill during Storm Aileen, you could have been excused a bad result. But I don't need to excuse a bad result, because Lincoln inflicted yet more misery on Forest Green Rovers, winning by a goal to nil and mounting seven shots on target at the home side's two. Yes, Forest Green have been poor this season, but it's still a good 3 points, and that was away from home. Lincoln away are reasonable, Lincoln at home formidable. If they avoid defeat on Saturday, they'll go a full calendar year without losing at Sinsel Bank, drawing seven, winning all of the others. Yes, they've only won one of their three there this season, drawing the other two. But one of those was against Luton, who are tipped for the title. The other against Morecambe, and that was a surprise, particularly given the shot count was 21 shots to 5. Also, I've got a lack of faith in the visitors to Lincoln this weekend, Mansfield, recurring theme on this podcast. They've only beaten Forest Green, who, as mentioned, have not been good, and Grimsby this season. Both of those were home games. They've not won away since April, and they were beaten 3-1 at home in the trophy this season by Lincoln. Part of Lincoln's current run of 4 wins in 5 games, in fact. So why on earth are they 6-4 to win this weekend at home? The outright is the Knapp, and that outright is Lincoln at 6-4.
I do hope you've enjoyed the Punt podcast this week. Thank you to everyone that's contributed. Pete Farries, Gav Pushlowski, Al Ross on the Football League action, and of course Derek McGovern and Andy Excel, and last but not least, The Guardian's Dominic Fifield, who was our guest from the Football Writers Association, and perfectly placed to discuss the sacking of Frank de Boer. If you want to check out all William Hill's podcasts, please go to audioboom.com. You can get this delivered weekly via iTunes as well, and make sure you check out on the app or on the website all the betting for the football action this week. Until next week, goodbye and good luck.